Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
This segment's brought to you by Advent. If you have snoring, sleep apnea, or nasal breathing problems, go to AdventNose.com to schedule your appointment.
This is the official radio home of the Chicago Cubs. Listen to every game here.
Swing and a drive to left field. This ball's got a chance. Gone. Two-run homer, Wilson Contreras.
On Sports Radio 670, The Score. Live from the Hyundai Studios. Presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. We are WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. And Odyssey Station. The Score!
This hour is brought to you by Team Hochberg. Visit their website, 56david.com. That's 56david.com.
3-2. Rodon. Oh, get there. To third. Moncada. Carlos Rodon has thrown a no-hitter.
It's Bernstein and Rahimi. Middays, 9 a.m. to noon on Chicago's Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Baseball talk rolls on. I'm Bernstein and Rahimi on Sports Radio 670 The Score, and we go back to the Alpamonte Nissan Hotline. Alpamonte Nissan on North Avenue in Melrose Park or at apnissan.com. Sarah Langs is an MLB stats expert, reporter, producer for MLB.com. You can follow her on Twitter at SLangs on Sports, and you can check her out on the Twitch stream as well, twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. Sarah, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you guys so much for having me. This was so much fun.
Yeah, thank you. And University of Chicago's own former NBC Sports Chicago intern, so we're glad to get you locally as well. And that said, I'm going to begin with the darkest stats first, because that's where my head is at. I'm sorry to be doom and gloom. The Cubs are batting 163. I don't know if it's good or bad, though, that the rest of baseball isn't doing much better at 235 league-wide. How do you put these numbers into context?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, the moment you said bad stats, I knew where we were going. I knew this was going to be Cubs batting average. And I mean, it's the second worst for any team through 12 games in a season in the modern era. The only team that was lower through 12 games was the 2003 Tigers. We know what they did. They did not win very many games. And, you know, to your point, we're certainly seeing lower batting averages across the league. You know, I was just talking to someone yesterday. We've already seen two no-hitters. We've seen two no-hitters by April 14th this year. Obviously, there's some sort of correlation there, at least in some amount, with that and the 235 team average. I do think across the league, the overall average will, you know, go up a bit as it gets warmer. We always see more offense, you know, once we get into June, July, and the warmer months. But for the Cubs, there's a lot of concerns there. I mean, it's really, you know, you wanted to see this group in kind of their last hurrah, perhaps, go out with a bit better showing. And it's only 12 games so far, but, you know, Javier Baez is still looking like 2020 Javier Baez. And Chris Bryant has hit a couple of home runs, but that still hasn't even been enough. So we just haven't seen them all jive at the same time.
The alarming number to me, Sarah, is not necessarily batting average, but it is in what I find to be a very telling, important, and elegant stat, and that is weighted runs created plus. Because it is contextualized, because it is the run environment in which they are, even with offense suppressed and even with the high strikeout rates and the three true outcomes and all that goes on, the Cubs as a team are 43% below average in the current run environment, with an unheard of, ghastly weighted runs created plus of just 57. That's almost not possible.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I'm definitely in the right place talking to you guys if your second question is WRC plus, so I love that. Thank you. But yeah, I mean, you know, as you were referring to, 100 is league average here. Anytime you're in a number below 100, you're going to have some questions. And 57, I mean, it just doesn't even make sense. You know, I was pulling that up as you were saying it. And there are some other teams that are below 100, but there's only a handful here that are really below 90. So really in that significantly below league average kind of group. And I just don't entirely know how this really happens. I mean, I do think that there's something to be said for small sample sizes and everything else, but pretty much any stat that you're looking at that is doing any adjusting or considering quality of contact, anything else, is still putting the Cubs very, very low on the list. So these are not simply, oh, low BABIP, this is going to work out next week.
This is not exactly great news with the Braves in town. In fact, it's a little terrifying when you think about Ronald Acuña Jr. How do you put into context what he's done so far this season?
Well, it's interesting that you say that even that way, because they haven't been great either. He's been incredible, and I'll certainly contextualize him. But for all that he's done, I mean, they have lost a lot of games late. They have not really been scoring across the board. Freddie Freeman has a BABIP thing going for him where he is just not hitting well at all, but that does seem like it will even out for him. But Ronald Acuña Jr. has been otherworldly. I mean, I think that we all expected him to be really good this year. I think he was one of the most common NL MVP picks entering the year just across the board and, you know, nationally. But I'm still not sure anyone expected it to be so electric and just so obvious so immediately. I mean, we had that Sunday Night Baseball game. He had that grounder to Didi Gregorius, two shortstop that he beat out. It was an infield single. That ball should not be an infield single. He hits a home run later in that game, and then he's basically been doing this every day where he has a really speedy trip around the bases, and then he hits a home run. And he's tied for the most extra base hits by any Braves player through this many games in the modern era with 1959 Henry Aaron, which tells you all you need to know about the type of production exactly. And through this many games, I think there's only three guys even across the board, any team who've had more extra base hits through this many games in the modern era. So, I mean, it's fun because it's really fun to get that confirmation bias. You know, this is what we wanted to happen and it's happening, but it's also happening in a way that I don't think I could have even imagined in terms of how great he has been.
You mentioned there's already been a couple of no-hitters, and we celebrated Carlos Rodon's no-hitter appropriately. And yet I wonder, with the domination of pitching, with velocity and nasty spin as high and as nasty as it's ever been, what's the meaning of a current no-hitter? What's the value of it? Are they less significant? Are they less impressive now than they used to be?
For me, I don't think they could ever lose that. I just think that for all of the fact that offense, you know, across the board, we're talking about batting average being down. And of course, you made reference to the fact that pitchers are nastier than they've ever been before. They're throwing harder than they've ever thrown before. Jacob DeGrom averages 99 miles an hour on his fastball right now through two starts this year. I mean, it doesn't even make sense. But even with all of that, we don't see this every day. And that tells me something. You know, if it were really that much easier in today's game with the power of pitchers and with the fact that a lot of guys are swinging for the fences and maybe striking out more and whatever else, then we would see more of them. And so I still think there's a lot of value to it. And I also think that so much of it isn't even statistical. I mean, you guys heard everything that Carlos Rodon had to say after that game. And there was just such a sense of validation from him. You know, like, I showed people I could do this. And for a guy who was a number three overall pick and had two surgeries, gotten untendered and everything else to come to have this moment. I mean, for me, a no-hitter could never be devalued because that means so much to him as a person, regardless of even the statistical, you know, frequency or anything else like that.
You're also keeping an eye on the White Sox pitching staff as a whole, and you've been paying attention to Lance Lynn and the tiny role that he's been on over the last couple of games. Asking the question on Twitter, can he have over 10 strikeouts and no walks in his next outing too? Only three pitchers with three straight such games since at least 1901. Twice it was Clayton Kershaw, and it was also Chris Archer in 2015. What do you think of Lynn's performance so far, given what you know about him, having pitched in Texas too?
For sure. I mean, I thought he was a great acquisition for them. You know, there was so much hype around the White Sox in the offseason and acquisitions and what they were putting together. And Lance Lynn is a guy who's just been there, you know, the last few years. I think he's really just gotten this reputation of he's going to throw a lot of innings. He's going to strike a lot of guys out on his fastball, and he's just going to be there and be steady and good. And I thought that was such a great addition to this rotation. We knew that Lucas Giolito was the ace now. We knew Dallas Keuchel obviously had a great performance last year, but I just thought that Lynn really added something to that group, and he's done exactly that. I mean, he didn't allow an earned run until yesterday, and he's been otherworldly. The stat you were referring to, 10 strikeouts and no walks, you know, that's a stat I love to look into. Whenever you see that in a box score, I'll always look into how many times has a guy done this, because it's rarer than you might think. I mean, we see 10 strikeouts a decent amount these days, but you know, not walking a guy, especially in today's game, and when you're throwing that many pitches, you know, you get up to 10 strikeouts, you have a pretty high pitch count. You know, something's going to slip. You're going to walk a guy somewhere or another. And it's really these elite strikeout guys who are able to avoid walking a guy when they have a performance like that. And I mean, it was crazy to me just that those were the only guys who've done that in three straight games, because it doesn't seem, even for all that I just said, three straight seems like, yeah, you could do that. Why not? But it's just Clayton Kershaw twice and Chris Archer, which is also a commentary on strikeouts we've seen lately, of course. But I mean, I love that list, and I love lists like that when you just never know who's going to be on it.
It's so funny you said that, because when he was being discussed yesterday, and Lance Lynn is fascinating because of how he's used modern technology and cameras to understand his pitching profile, because of how he's been a different kind of starter wherever he's been and been a good fit. And yesterday on NBC Sports Chicago, we heard Jason Benetti and Steve Stone comparing him to somebody I watched a lot as a kid, comparing him to Rick Rushel. Of being able to still consistently throw a sinker, and that's just what's coming. There's going to be this fastball or that fastball, and he's going to keep you off balance. So I was compelled to then go to Baseball Reference and look up his statistically most similar pitchers. And Sarah, like, I read these 10 names, and I have absolutely no conclusion to draw, because his most similar, from least to most similar, Ted Lewis, Eric Schau, J.R. Richard, Jim O'Toole, Mario Soto, Pete Vukovic, Alex Fernandez, Teddy Higuera, Steve Blass, and Jake Arrieta. And what does that mean? I have no earthly idea.
Yeah, I mean, that's fascinating. You know, we have something on the Baseball Savant website that does that, but based on pitch arsenal. And I wish that it went back prior to, you know, this pitch tracking era of 2008, because I would love to see, you know, the comparison you were making and that Benetti was making with the sinker, you know, for guys prior to 2008. But these similarity scores are so funny. You know, it's looking at innings pitched and, you know, just kind of box score stats and comparing the trajectories. But it is really interesting because I'm also looking at the most similar specifically by ages, and there's a bunch of Jake Arrieta seasons mm-hmm. in there. And it's really interesting if you think about those guys, because Jake Arrieta is someone who had an amazing second half in 2015, won a Cy Young for it, and was kind of viewed as one of these power pitchers. But if you look at the overall trajectory of his career, I can see how that's similar to Lance Lynn in terms of overall stats. The difference is that he had like 2 to 3 years of overt hype and expectation that he was going to win a Cy Young every year. Lance Lynn has never really had that, but it's interesting when you think about numbers and average it all out that the innings pitched and everything else are going to actually land up pretty similarly. But I liked what you said about how he sort of managed to fit a couple different pitching staffs just over the course of his career. And I think that that's kind of undervalued. I mean, there are a lot of guys who go to a team and you don't just have that understanding that, yeah, he'll be good for this rotation no matter what, beyond being, you know, a Cy Young winner or something like that. But there's just something about the way Lance Lynn has been able to adjust and pitch in different environments where, again, it just seemed like this was going to be a great fit, and it has been so far.
To that end, we've talked a lot about the idea of Lance Lynn giving 200 innings, but with modern bullpenning and what we're seeing, just how the pandemic is affecting everything as well, I don't know how many of those we're going to get. You study numbers all the time. What do you think the likelihood is, or even a ballpark figure for guys who are going to reach that 200 inning mark this year?
Yeah, I do think it'll be a pretty low number. It'll certainly be lower than we saw in 2019 and in previous years. I would guess that he is a guy who, assuming he stays healthy, will probably get there. I haven't actually, you know, he only has 19 and two-thirds innings so far this year. I'm not sure exactly where that you know, multiplies out to if we were to give him, you know, 30 to 33 starts. But I think it'll be much more that teams with aces, my expectation is that it's going to be teams with aces who are not very young and still being very closely managed are going to be the teams that will have a guy kind of reach that mark. I mean, I would assume Garrett Cole will get there. I would assume Max Scherzer, if he stays healthy, will get there. But once you get, you know, Jacob deGrom, certainly. But I'm not sure that we're going to see as many, you know, third and fourth starters necessarily getting to that mark, because especially with those concerns ramping guys up after last year. And, you know, that just amplifies the concerns, especially with young pitchers, when you're trying to figure out exactly what their career trajectory is going to be.
Sarah, as you look at batted ball data and the StatCast measurements, have you been able to draw any early conclusions about the ballistic behavior of this baseball?
You know, I haven't. I mean, I know that there's been some research out there, and there are certainly people putting together numbers overall, but the average exit velocity in the majors is up slightly. I think that, you know, there are certainly people who think that that could have to do with the baseball. I think there could be other things going on. I mean, it's still so early. Like, the Mets have played like 7 games, 10 games. Like, we're still not even at the point where every team is kind of across the board. But it does seem like exit velocity is maybe a bit up. I mean, we've seen some guys certainly reach their highest ever exit velocity on a batted ball a couple times this year, but we're still seeing long home runs. I mean, I'll watch it no matter what the ball is doing, you know, so maybe I'm not the perfect candidate for the question, but so far I think that, you know, it hasn't seemed that much different from other years to me. But I haven't necessarily studied it super closely, I will admit.
You had a really fun article on MLB.com, the 15 stats and facts from Carlos Rodon's no-hitter. Do you have a favorite there?
I think my favorite is Zach Collins. So the fact that Zach Collins was catching his 16th ever game, so 16th time he'd ever been behind the plate when he caught that no-hitter for Carlos Rodon, and that's tied for the 15 games before that are tied for the fifth fewest by any catcher to catch a no-hitter in the modern era. That's amazing in and of itself, right? There's someone on that list who caught 3 games before catching a no-hitter, which, I mean, you must feel like, wow, luckiest day in the world, right? Your fourth ever game. But I really like that. I really like how emotional Collins was after the game. He said he was nervous. He said he'd never caught a no-hitter at any level. So I love when the stat kind of speaks to a storyline as well. But the coolest thing about that to me was that on that same day that Carlos Rodon threw the no-hitter, we were celebrating Yadier Molina because he was catching his 2000th career game with Cardinals. He's never caught a no-hitter. Yadier Molina is, you know, there's a whole debate. He's a potentially Hall of Fame catcher. Wherever you want to go there, we don't need to go there. He's caught 2,000 games, all with the Cardinals. I know I'm talking about the Cardinals. I know you guys are in Chicago. But 2,000 games, and he's never caught a no-hitter. Zach Collins is sitting here, 16th game behind the plate, and he caught a no-hitter. I mean, I just, like, that's what I love about numbers and baseball history and everything, is that something crazy like that can happen. So for me, that was the one that I just, like, could not stop thinking about.
We were talking about it yesterday when Pedro Martinez was talking with Carlos Rodon, and Pedro Martinez says, "You did something I never did." And I had to remember, he threw 8 one-hitters, never threw a no-hitter, and yet his brother Ramon with the Dodgers in 95 did throw a no-hitter. And I guess it speaks to what you were saying before, is no matter the run environment, it just how rare and special and how many things have to fall into place for it to happen.
Absolutely. I mean, I love that. I mean, you can go through all these kinds of stats with, like, guys never have a 4-homer game. You know, I feel like it really happens with these kind of feats like that. But I just love that for Zach Collins. And the fact that it was the day that Yadi caught his 2000th game, I mean, I just could not get over that.
Sometimes baseball finds ways of harmonizing with itself that can be immensely satisfying. Sarah, this is great, and I look forward to talking again soon. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you guys so much. This was so much fun.
Thank you, Sarah. Appreciate it.
Sarah Langs of MLB.com, a reporter and producer. How about we continue some smart baseball talk? Because Theo Epstein, who is in charge of a special project for MLB, was on MLB Network yesterday discussing these experimental efforts to try to figure out how to bring the game back into balance. So you will hear from the former Cubs president of baseball operations next on Bernstein and Rahimi on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
It's Bernstein and Rahimi, middays 9 a.m. to noon on Chicago's Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Baseball is trying to fix itself, or at least there are some involved in baseball who finally, at long last, are aware that there are some issues that at least need to be addressed. And they're going to do so testing some things in the minor leagues and in the independent Atlantic League as well. And the guy in charge of it is a very familiar voice. It's Theo Epstein, the former president of baseball operations of the Cubs, and now is working a little bit more altruistically to crunch some of the numbers, despite the fact that at least he knows part of this is his fault, that he and others in trying to find market inequities and find value began to create this game because of what they how they realized they could sort of game the game a little bit. Defensive positioning, understanding that there's only three people in the outfield and needing to launch the ball over some of these positioned defenses, understanding the value of walks. Well, now he's trying to fix it. And the first thing that he talked about on MLB Network was changing the designated hitter rule, perhaps, in a way that may limit pitching changes, may incentivize the starting pitcher remaining in the game. It's called the double hook rule, and he described this sort of hybrid of AL and NL batting rules.
Well, the double hook rule allows both teams to start with the designated hitter, and the DH can stay in the game as long as the starting pitcher stays in the game. And then once the starting pitcher is removed, there's no DH, and you're back to essentially National League rules. So it's a bit of a balancing act between the rule that currently exists in the AL and the rule that currently exists in the NL. And you can make the argument that it preserves the best of both rules. You still get the late game strategy of the National League and having to make judgments on how long to leave your pitcher in and using your pinch hitters strategically. And then you also have roles for designated hitters, and some of the best veteran hitters in the game can have prolonged careers by serving as DHs. And one thing we especially like about it is it puts a bit of a premium back on starting pitchers going deeper in games. And that's one thing that it's been clear from all the fan outreach that we've done, that fans like having a prominent role in the game for starting pitchers. You get to know who the starting pitcher is on the day you go to the ballpark. You get to know your starting pitchers and follow the narrative through the course of a game or through the course of a season. And that's been chipped away at a little bit in recent years with bigger pitching staffs, starting pitchers not going as deep in games, the prominence of the opener, the prominence of these middle relievers who do a great job and have really good stuff, but are a little bit more anonymous than starting pitchers to your casual fan. So this rule will put a little bit more emphasis on starting pitchers going deeper in games, going three times through the order. And I think that's overall good for baseball and good for baseball fans.
What do you think? I still think that managers are going to make pitching changes, and then they'll just say, look, we'll just use pinch hitters. I don't know how strong an incentive it really is going to be.
So you know where I first read this was Jason Stark.
Mm-hmm. It's his
Jason
idea.
Stark. Yeah, he threw it out there a couple months ago, and I remember you and I talked about it a little bit off show, outside of the show, because it was something that we had to like set up and like get into, and now it's becoming a little more widespread, the idea. I like it because it's less high impact than some of the other decisions they're trying to make. Like it's less, I think it's going to affect the game less.
It's less noticeable. Like it's less obvious. And I don't think the incentive is quite what they think it is. Ideally, having a starting pitcher stay in the game accomplishes more than what he's saying. It's more than just the relationship the fan has. It's more than just this temporal continuity that they're trying to limit pitching changes, and maybe that second time or third time through the order, you're getting increased offense. It may just be that this is kind of a secret sauce, but they're not saying that. They're not saying that maybe a tired pitcher is more likely to give up a hit rather than replacing him with a guy coming in throwing 99, you know?
The other thing, too, that I like about this is I've said this. If you're going to change the rules in baseball, then you also need to change the roster requirements thusly. There should be more opportunities for people if you're going to change all these other rules. So I think this creates more incentive for baseball to have a better bench. I think this creates more opportunities for what we like to call now the middle class of free agents. And I want to see things like this expanded in football as well. But the idea being there are more opportunities for players who might be either underpaid or out of luck or sent down or something along those lines. This helps that problem.
So, Theo, what about the idea of the Atlantic League trying to move that mound back ever so slightly for the second half of their season and what that may do?
A lot of people at Major League Baseball and across the game at Commissioner Manfred's behest have spent a lot of time focusing on different ways to try to get that batter-pitcher dynamic back into balance. And we're trying a lot of different things. You know, obviously there's a ball with new characteristics at the big league level. There's contemplation of changes to the strike zone, changes to the playing rules. So a lot of different ways to attack it. But the simple fact remains that we may just have outgrown 60 feet, 6 inches. 60 feet, 6 inches, obviously a really significant, important, sacred number in baseball. No one is hoping to have to change that. But I think we need to find out. You know, we'll gain a lot more information this year simply by moving the pitching rubber back 12 inches and seeing what that does to the batter-pitcher dynamic. Does it give hitters a chance to make more contact? It really should, because you're buying hitters 1/100th of a second of reaction time. That's the equivalent of about a tick and a half of velocity. So it gets you back to the reaction time the hitters benefited from, say, 10, 15 years ago when the contact rate was a little better and the strikeout rate was more under control.
So what are you getting at here, Theo? What are you trying to do to our game? Are you trying to change this game drastically? Are we going to even recognize baseball?
Soulless Theo Epstein.
Yeah, well, I mean, essentially, he did actually try to explain what the end game is here.
All fans and all of us at Major League Baseball and everyone in the baseball community has in common is our love of the game, and no one's looking to get away from the essence of baseball. What we're hoping to do is to move the game slightly in a direction where we can get closer to the very best version of baseball. And I encourage everyone watching at home and reading about these rule changes to spend some time on their own thinking about what is the very best version of baseball? What is the most enjoyable, the most joyful, the most entertaining version of baseball? And the consensus seems to be that, you know, we could stand to have a little bit more action, a little bit more entertainment value in the game. And a lot of that comes with more contact, you know, not requiring kids watching major league games to wait 4 minutes for a ball in play, not having a quarter of all plate appearances end in strikeouts. So we think it's appropriate, especially with a new collective bargaining agreement on the horizon. And there's going to come a time when we sit down with the players and collaboratively and together set out a course to try to nudge the game towards the very best version of baseball. We think it's appropriate to find out as much as we can about what different variables work and what doesn't work in trying to create a playing environment that produces the best product for our fans and the very best version of the game we love.
Good luck. I mean it. I mean it as a baseball fan. Good luck. And I hope there isn't too much resistance. I hope there is an open-mindedness to a lot of this.
I want to see more people on base. The end. That's it. And then I want stuff to happen once they're on base, like stealing, you know, maybe a hit and run. Not just the show. I love the show. But an actual one. That would be nice.
I like this point here from Glenn, who emails to say, what about the blowout game problem of the double hook? Let's say you're Cleveland playing the White Sox and the first inning your starter gives up six. If you pull the starter and you pull your starting DH before he gets a single plate appearance, that distinctly hurts your chances of making up the six-run deficit. Yeah, that's a headwind. That's a good thought.
It also prioritizes position players. Mm-hmm. So then maybe your DH isn't just a guy who can only hit. It's a problem if you're Eloy Jimenez, potentially. But is it a problem if you're, say, Jose Abreu?
No, but that's not a bad thought. I think that's a good way of finding something that may not be wholly good from that. And that's why we got to implement these things. You got to see them, you got to work them around, and you got to learn from them. I have something regarding the upcoming NFL draft that I think is kind of scary if you're a Bears fan, right? It falls into the category of just being so Bears. Of course this is happening this year. Of course it is. That's next on Bernstein and Rahimi on The Score.
What did you say about collaboration?
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
So, of course, this happens to be the year that the Bears are in this draft, in this season, trying to keep it all together, trying to keep hope alive and to keep people employed. And I read this today on The Defector, a friend of the show, Kalen Kaler, under the headline, "This could be the thinnest NFL draft in living memory." And she's got data to back it up here. And she writes, "Looking to make the NFL without having what might normally be considered NFL-level talent, this is your year." She quotes one anonymous scout who says, "There are going to be some absolute slaps drafted this year." And that is, slap is short for a long-standing scout term that means a guy who can't really play. He said, "With the NCAA granting athletes an extra year of eligibility after a COVID-warped season, a large number of players are returning to school. The pool of prospects going pro is significantly smaller," and they measure this in a couple ways. One is with the number of signed SRAs. That's a standard representation agreement with an NFL agent. By mid-April of 2019, 1,972 players had signed an SRA. By mid-April of 2020, 1,839. This year, 657.
Ugh.
Like a third of the pool. They also say, looking at a team's backboard, their undrafted free agent prospect rankings, their front board is for draft picks, the backboard is for the others. And all teams that she talked to estimated that their backboard was smaller, 20 to 30% smaller than in a normal year. Now, with this all happening, it means next year's draft is going to be incredibly deep. This year, you will have undrafted free agent types being drafted. It says next year, you'll have undrafted free agents being, in large part, draftable prospects. So, of course, the Bears are in a situation where they need guys this year.
Yeah! Go Bears!
Right? Of course it happens to them. But that's not why I called. Real quick, importantly, tell people what they can watch tonight if they are so inclined.
Oh, yes. I was supposed to do this last year. We had a little thing happen called COVID-19. So this year it's happening tonight. The Dancing with Chicago Celebrities from Arthur Murray. A.M. Arthur Murray. D.W.C.C. Arthur Murray Dancing with Chicago Celebrities. .org. So AMDWCC.org. You can donate to the cause. It is for breast cancer causes. It's the big show that they usually have every year. Of course, we couldn't have it last year. I got a new dance partner, did a whole new routine, and have been spending several hours a week on that. And the performance is tonight. It starts at 7. And no pressure, but apparently the portion I filmed is first.
Oh, perfect. At
yeah.
7 o'clock. And this is on the website.
Yes, you can go to the link on the website. Thank you to everybody who has donated. Somebody, I think his name is Kevin, sent a donation for $83. And the message was, "What about Dinks?"
Share the link, if you would, in the Twitch stream and obviously, again, on Twitter so everybody can watch. Can you tell us what style of dance it is? Is it a tango? Is it a waltz? Is it a foxtrot?
It started out as a samba, but, like, it's a show routine. Like, a ballroom is not really my thing. I took a ton of other dance and, like, did the rocket kick line stuff for a long time. So, like, but I had to be on the end because I'm 5'3". You have to be 5'6" to be a rocket. That's the third time I've made that noise today. But it's tonight. I will share the link. Well, it's a bit of a samba. Like, there's a few stunts in there, like lifts and stuff. I don't really know how to categorize it.
Okay.
Because it's ballroom. I had to dance with somebody else, and that's an adjustment in my life. But it was a lot of fun. And if you guys don't want to watch the Bulls game, I'm around at 7. So that's happening. I'll make sure to put the link on my Twitter, and then I'll put it in our chat so Gertch can pop it onto the Twitch stream. So, yes.
And I think if you make that noise again, you owe Lily Tomlin money from her, is it Edith Ann? Was there her character that sat in the oversized rocking chair and made that noise? But I'm dating myself with that reference. Also, I went to college with a couple of Rockettes. Twin sisters at Duke. And one day somebody mentions it, like the alumni magazine had this whole story. They were actual Kickline Radio City Music Hall Rockettes for a while.
So awesome. Like I can do all the high kicks. I just am not, A, skinny enough and B, tall enough. Like there are requirements there, but it's pretty cool.
I can't even do half a high kick and my hamstring would tear off right from the bone. It'd be awful. Is it Lawrence or do we have, are we getting into Cubs stuff? We do have Lawrence.
I don't know. But I will also say this to wrap up the show, to put a bow on it. I did get a lot of unsolicited advice about don't pull a hamstring.
For me.
Thank God. Thank God if it wasn't for y'all, I would have never known I had hamstrings. Come on.
It's been a lifetime teaching dance and taking dance, and now you need people on Twitch to tell you to be careful and actually to stretch before it.
Twitch has been fine. It's everywhere else that's stupid.
We'll talk to Lawrence next on The Score.
He's doing a dance, and he wants to say hello.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O' Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh.